You Jackie Robinson?
That's the voice of Marshalltown native Toby Huss, playing the part of baseball scout Clyde Sukeforth in the new movie 42, a film about baseball legend Jackie Robinson. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, my conversation with veteran Hollywood actor and Iowa native Toby Huss about his role in the new film that portrays Jackie Robinson, the Major League's first black player in the modern era. He'll also tell us what it was like to work with Harrison Ford in the film. Then we'll talk with Cedar Rapids Colonels fans about the baseball team's new affiliation with the Minnesota Twins. That's all coming up. First, this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. When it comes to commercial movie going, there are some pretty basic categories you find in any given year at the top of the box office. Of course, there's romances and comedies, animated features, and we can't forget superhero films. But lately, the history lesson film has been popular as well. There was Steven Spielberg's film, Lincoln, a huge box office success. But more recently, racism is also at the heart of a current popular movie based in history titled 42. It's the story of Jackie Robinson, played by Chad Boseman, and his history-making signing with the Brooklyn Dodgers under the guidance of team executive Branch Rickey, who is played by Harrison Ford. 42 has done big box office since its release almost a month ago, and it's received rave reviews, even earning a rare grade of A+ on CinemaScore, and that's a feat for any film, let alone a period drama. Also appearing in the movie 42 with a substantial role, Marshalltown native Toby Huss, who attended the University of Iowa. Toby Huss plays Clyde Sukeforth, a real-life coach, scout, and manager who is best known for signing Jackie Robinson to the major leagues, the first black player in the modern era. Toby Huss joins me now via Skype from Hollywood. Hi, Toby.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, tell us more about the character you play in here in this latest film, Clyde Sukeforth, and his relationship to Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey.
Yeah, Clyde. What a great man this guy Clyde was. He lived to be 98, 99 years old or something. He just died in 2000, 2001, something like that. 50-plus year career in baseball. He started off as a catcher, and then he was shot. He was an avid hunter, and he got shot by a pal of his, and he almost lost his eye. So after that, his batting average dropped precipitously, and he started to get into managing, and he worked with Rickey and the Dodgers. And he actually, it's not really totally covered in the movie, but he was the one who went down to there was a little dramatic license they took. He went down to Chicago to find Jackie playing with the Kansas City Monarchs at a game. And Jackie had just hurt his arm, I think, and had to rest at about 3 days. And he said, well, come to Brooklyn and meet Mr. Rickey. So he brings Jackie to Brooklyn, and Jackie thinks that he might get a different Negro League contract or a minor league contract. Didn't know that it was going to be for the majors.
You said they took a little bit of dramatic license. How historically accurate is your role with Sukeforth and his work with Jackie Robinson here?
Oh, it's pretty good, most of it. I mean, they planned to have the scene at a minor league stadium somewhere in Chicago or around there where we could shoot it, but it just budgetarily, they couldn't do it. So they had to make it at the gas station. There's a story of Jackie getting gas at a gas station. So they said, let's just do it there. So you just come upon him there.
Oh, that's right. That's when they step off a bus and you meet the character, Chad Boseman, who's playing Jackie Robinson there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I meet him. It didn't really happen like that, but it's all right. That gas station, incidentally, we were shooting there in Chadwick. We've been shooting there for about 4 or 5 hours a day. And Chadwick said, hey, come here. And we'd look, and it was a real old gas station out somewhere in the middle of Georgia somewhere. And he said, check this out. And there are two doorways that led to the old bathrooms that were there. And one of them still, you could still see the word colored written above it.
Really?
Yeah, it was just faded, but you could barely see it. It said colored, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What type of other preparation went in into this role for you? Because, of course, it's a film about baseball, if it's about the life of Jackie Robinson. But I was struck, and I think a lot of viewers would be struck, not just younger ones, about how viciously racist our country was a very short time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate and awful, but it seems to be the reality. There's Chapman, the coach of Philadelphia, who used to stand outside of his dugout and just bellow racial epithets at Jackie. It was pretty awful.
And that we hear in the film.
Not entirely uncommon that was going on. And you know, the film was pretty, it was direct in certain specifics, but what you didn't get was the, you know, the aggregate that this poor man had to live through, that was the constant balls getting thrown to his head, balls getting thrown to his knees, you know, getting spiked on first base constantly, getting shoved, getting smashed, and, you know, epithets here and calling them names there. Just the concept. The guy died young. He was in, I forget how old he was, died in the 70s, in the 1970s. His wife is still around. Rachel is still around. She's a fantastic woman, just gorgeous and fantastic, and came down to the set when we were shooting in Macon and visited us, and we got to hang out with her and talk with her just a little bit. She's a really just a phenomenal woman, just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. One particularly good scene that your character is in many during this film, 42. Your character, Clyde Sukforth, is training Jackie Robinson's character. And you're hitting balls to Jackie on the field, sort of just warming him up in fielding. Tell us what's going on in that scene.
I'm hitting fungos. They're called fungos. It's a longer bat that, you know, coaches use. Little league coaches know about them. So, you know, they were working out Chadwick and some of the other actors in, I think, Thousand Oaks or something before the movie started, about this time last year, or in March of last year. So I would go up there now and again and just hit fungos, because I was in Little League when I was a kid in Marshalltown. And I'd like to say that I was probably a pretty decent fielder and I couldn't bat. My batting average was 0.67. I was awful. I couldn't hit the ball. I was just terrible. Yeah. I mean, 0.67 is 1 of 36 or something like that. It's just terrible. Yeah. So I prided myself on saying, no, I was a pretty good second baseman. But the reality is I was probably awful at that too. I probably couldn't hit or field. So I thought, well, if I got to hit fungos in this movie, I better learn how to hit a ball. So, you know, I could hit, but I went up and I practiced fungos with these guys, and I grabbed a couple of buddies of mine and we'd go out to a park and hit fungos to them. So basically it was just me and Jackie, and I got pretty good actually by the end when we shot this scene. Actually, the day we were supposed to shoot the scene, I didn't know it was even a scene. I didn't get that revision of the script, and they said, we're shooting the fungo scene with Jackie. I said, so what, am I just hitting him? They said, no, you got this whole thing about him being conspicuous. I said, maybe someone should give me a script real quick so I can see this scene. They said, oh, yeah, here, come on, we got to do it fast. So we were on the B camera, so we had to get it done fast, and I hadn't seen the scene before. And okay, I got it. But it was kind of a trick to hit to Jackie while you're saying the lines while all this was going on. But it was kind of fun, actually.
It came out really well because the theater that I was in, you're conspicuous. And what you're telling Jackie Robinson, he's got to do things conspicuously on the field, right?
Yeah.
It came off really well. A nice-sized laugh in a theater that you weren't in Iowa, but I hope that's satisfying.
Good. Success! I think they went, there's a really great photograph of them, and I think it was in Panama where they did that, where they had spring training in Panama. There's a great photograph of Sukforth, a couple other guys from around that time. You know, they're out having cocktails and smoking cigars after their practice at some little bar in Panama. It's a great photo.
If you just joined us, my guest is Toby Huss. He has been a Hollywood actor for over 20 years, a native of Marshalltown. He's best known for a number of roles before this latest one. He's best known for playing Artie, the strongest man in the world, in the Nickelodeon series Pete and Pete, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, I guess it's called, from the mid-90s. He's a Frank Sinatra impersonator. Rudy Cassoni is the, what do I want to say, Toby?
The illegitimate son of Sinatra, this guy believes he is.
What Toby calls the illegitimate son of Frank Sinatra. His film credits include Rescue Dawn with Christian Bale, directed by Werner Herzog, also Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise, Bedazzled with Brendan Fraser, and Elizabeth Hurley. Also, he played several main characters on the long-running animation animated series King of the Hill. His latest film is titled 42, The True Story of an American Legend, starring Harrison Ford. My guest Toby Huss plays Clyde Sukforth in the film, best known for signing Jackie Robinson to the major leagues as the first black player in the modern era. Toby, how did you come to be cast in 42?
It was an audition. It was a regular audition. They were looking for... I went in for the part that Leo Durocher, the Christopher Maloney, got, and I auditioned for that. And then Brian Helgeland, the writer-director, had me back to audition for Sukforth. And then when I started studying Sukforth, you know, at the time, in 1947, he was 47 years old. He was 5'10", 155 pounds, and that's exactly what I was.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 5'10", I was probably about 160 pounds, so I was pretty portly compared to Clyde. But yeah, that at one point in time, in the 1930s, probably to the 50s, that was the size of a lot of major league catchers. About 5'10", about 155, 160 pounds.
Did you pay attention to his manner of speech, his cadence, or did that something you just created?
Well, you know, I went up to his hometown, Waldoboro, Maine, and I also went to Washington, Maine, a little town where he was born. But in Waldoboro, I met this guy, Billy Maxwell, who knew Clyde. He's about my age, but he was a minor. He was a he coached. Well, he's a I think he's the fire chief there in Waldoboro, but he coached a lot of Little League and Pop Warner stuff. And Clyde, who had since retired, you know, in the all through the 70s and 80s and 90s, lived there in Waldoboro, and he'd take his lawn chair and he'd go sit and watch the kids warm up. So I thought, well, you know, and watch him play games, little games. I thought, well, I got to go see this guy. I got to go see where this guy is from. So I just stopped at the local library and I asked around, and they said, you should talk to Billy Maxwell. He's over at the Firestar. All right. So I drove down and talked to Billy. He said, hey, that's great. Let's go talk to his neighbors. All right. So he drove me out. We saw his house. I just showed up like on a Saturday or Friday or something. And they couldn't have been more gracious, couldn't have been better. And talked to the guy who lived across the street from him, who was a World War II vet. And talked to the guy down the street, who was an old lobsterman, who when we drove up in a car, he sees both of us walking. He sees Billy. He hadn't seen Billy in a while. This is a guy, like a 50-year-old guy or something. He goes, what are you doing? I don't know if he just woken up, but what are you doing there, you old so-and-so? What's going on here? I couldn't understand a word the guy was, but he was happy to see his pal. And then we started talking, and I started getting the accent from him. And, you know, towards the end of his life, he didn't have much of an accent. But I figure in the 40s, he probably has still had some of that accent from Maine, because it's a pretty thick, specific accent. So I did a bit of a Maine accent.
Mm.
But this guy, Clyde, was a there's a great story that they told that he would, you know, all over the world, people would send him balls and bats to sign for their trade shows and to get his autograph. It was a sought-after autograph, because he was at the apex of three different really conspicuous events in the major leagues. One was the signing of Jackie Robinson. The second one was the shot heard around the world. And the third one was Roberto Clemente. He was instrumental in signing him. So people would get him to sign balls and stuff. And he made a deal. He said, look, if you want me to sign a ball, you want me to sign a few balls, you got to give a dozen to the kids in the Pee Wee Leagues here in Waldoboro. I said, okay. So this guy Billy said, and Clyde would then take these balls and he'd go out and he'd put them in the cubby holes of the baseball diamonds when they were out there. And Billy said that one day they go out there and Clyde had just come in the night before and he'd put the balls in the cubby holes there for the kids, the new balls, and took them out and they're hitting them with him. And one of the kids runs up and he goes, hey, Billy, you're writing all over this. And he goes, what? And he looks at the baseball and they've been signed by like Reggie Jackson and Joe DiMaggio and all this stuff. And he went, oh, we must have gotten the balls mixed up. He gave us the wrong one. So Billy goes to Clyde and he goes, hey, Clyde, I think you gave us the wrong balls. These guys got major league autographs on them. We got, you know, Reggie Jackson and all these guys here, George Brett signing them. And Clyde looks at him and he goes, ah, that's all right. The kids won't mind.
Oh, wow. I bet not.
Very lovely. So the kids got to play with some pretty expensive balls for a while.
Toby, the director for this film, 42, about Jackie Robinson, is Brian Helgeland. I see in looking at his bio, he's primarily known as a screenwriter. In fact, he won Oscar for Best Screenplay in 1997 for L.A. Confidential. What was he like to work with?
He was wonderful. He was really finely tuned to what was happening at that time. He did a lot of research. There's an iPhone app you can download about baseball. It has every stats for every game ever played. It's just an incredible app. But we were sitting there, and one day we didn't know who the pitcher was for the next day. We just thought, well, we should know if it's Ralph Branca or somebody else. And I was looking it up, and we're going, well, yeah, so I think it's like May 14th or something like that, after they had the game with Pittsburgh. Who's the pitcher? And Brian goes, you know, no, it wasn't Branca. He must have pitched the week or a couple days before. But he doesn't know that, and he did. He knew who was, like, pitching around, you know, who the pitchers were and who they were facing at the time. So this guy was all over the material and all over the history of these guys. And then working with the actors, he was really had a really gentle hand and kind of let us find a lot of stuff in the characters that we did and you know, the situations. There's some pretty tense moments and some pretty dramatic ones when you're dealing with this sort of volatile combination of, you know, the really tense and you know, volatile racial history of America. Right. In a real compacted way.
Toby, you've worked with a number of different directors. You no doubt by this time, after more than 20 years working in Hollywood, have a good feeling for, I guess, the spectrum of how directors can be, how they can treat you on the set and in preparation for a film. You've worked, for instance, with Werner Herzog on Rescue Dawn with Christian Bale. I wonder if you can give us a sense of what that spectrum is for an actor, what actors maybe like or don't like about certain ways directors go about it, or just what to expect. I imagine there are very hands-on directors and others who, as you seem to indicate about Brian Helgeland, just very hands-off and soft.
Yeah, I think a lot of the guys who are really good, and a lot of the women who are really good, I just worked with Nicole Holofcener for a picture that she's doing coming up. And a lot of the ones that are really good, they don't mess with the actors too much. They cast you and they know what you can do and they sort of let you roam around in your character and work a scene. Or maybe it just seems like they don't do too much. I think the ones that are hardest for me to work with are the ones that are very hands-on. And that could be one of two things. Maybe they think that they need more control, or maybe they think that I'm doing a really crappy job and they got to step in and say something, which could be the case. But Brian was very... he was very delicate. When he'd come in and say something or adjust you a certain way, you'd know that he meant it, and you'd know what he was going at. And it would always be a really insightful thing. And the same thing with, you know, Werner was like that, and Michel Gondry was like that, and Harold Ramis was too. They would have little pops. They would come in now and again with one little idea, one little thing that wouldn't explode the scene, but it would really make you see something differently and really be informative. And it's nice to work with people like that because there's a lot of trust there, too.
The big box office draw, of course, for this film, 42, about the life of Jackie Robinson, is Harrison Ford, who plays the team executive, Branch Rickey of the Brooklyn Dodgers. What was it like to work those scenes with Harrison Ford?
He's lovely. You know, I worked with him in this picture called Cowboys and Aliens a couple years ago. He tortured me all night on the banks of the Rio Grande River. And it was fun. He was just, he's an old pro. It's really crazy when you're working with somebody who's been around for so long, that has done so much really, really great work, really quality stuff constantly. I mean, you never see him in a movie and go, oh, that guy again. He's always bringing something good to it, even if it's a very Harrison Ford-like, you know, guy. But he's fun. He doesn't mess around either, man. He puts his head down, and when he's doing it, he's really in it. But in that big scene with Chadwick in the beginning of the picture.
Right. Describe the scene a little bit.
Well, it's after I go down, and after Clyde Sukforth goes down and he grabs Jackie and he brings it back to Brooklyn, and he meets with Branch Rickey. And the scene was actually longer. It got cut up a bit. There were some other great things in it, but probably just time they couldn't have it in. But You know, we rehearsed the scene a few times, and it was Harrison, you know, saying, well, maybe I should be here and I should come over here during this part. And he walks over there and does something. And I'm, you know, I'm trying to stay out of their way because it's about those guys. But the only reason that anybody knows anything about that meeting was because Clyde Sukforth told the story later, like in the 1960s or 70s. Somebody asked him, he said, yeah, there's three people there. It was Jackie and Branch Rickey and me. And they said, well, what'd they say? And he said, well, he told them, you know, what Branch was saying to Jackie and how Jackie responded. And at one point, I think they cut this out where because Branch Rickey was a catcher too, and so was Clyde. And Branch Rickey says to Jackie Robinson, he goes, you got a girl? Jackie goes, excuse me? He goes, you got a girl? He goes, yeah, I got to go. Do you love her? Well, sir, I don't know what you mean. Do you love her? And he says, yeah, I love her. And he says, well, marry her. Excuse me? Marry her. You don't want to be the only person coming home to tonight to be your catcher. And he goes, okay. And he did, and that's when. And then the scene in the movie is he calls her afterwards after this meeting and asks her to marry him. But that was sort of because, and it's probably, you know, look, he loved her and wanted to be with her, but it was, you know, insisted upon by Branch that, because he said, you can't do this alone. It has to be, there has to be somebody there that you're with.
Marshalltown.
And Rachel was that woman.
Marshalltown native Toby Huss, a Hollywood actor in the latest film, 42, starring Harrison Ford. Toby, I thought we'd end this little conversation by pointing out that people should find out more about you. But you're a man of many, many talents. One of those talents you are known far and wide for, it's your Frank Sinatra impersonation. Actually, your longtime alter ego, Rudy Cassoni, who is, you say, the what?
The bastard son. A guy who believes he's the bastard son of Sinatra. Sinatra's bastard son.
And I'd like to end this conversation after we say goodbye with your 2008 spoof of Rudy Cassoni, spoof of Sinatra's Singing the Praises of Sarah Palin. This is weeks after she had been selected by John McCain. The video can be found on YouTube. Before we listen and say goodbye to you, would you like to tell us anything about making it?
It was, well, it's funny because it went through another Iowa native, this guy from Iowa City named Andrew Steele, who runs that website, or he's the creative director of the website Funny or Die. And I said, hey, do you mind if I do a Palin thing or something? He said, yeah, sure, go ahead. We'll get you a camera guy and a sound guy. All right. So I borrowed a buddy of mine's car, and we shot it in about 4 hours. And that was it. It was just, I mean, we shot it 4 hours, but I did the song before, and we had the song. So
you wrote the lyrics and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And then this guy, Andy Paley, a musician, and some other musician friends of mine did the music. But it's based on You Make Me Feel So Young. It's that tune.
Any reaction from Sarah Palin or John McCain?
No, but I take their non-reaction as a definite reaction. No, they didn't know.
Toby.
You know what, Ben? This is the one instance where I don't think I affected international geopolitics. I think I normally do, but this one, it escaped me. I don't know how they weren't shaken to the core.
Toby Huss, thanks for joining us today, and continued good luck on your Hollywood career, and thanks for checking back in with us here in Iowa.
Thanks, man. Feel his time has come. We can already smell your wind and see your giant tooth-figuring begin. You got that trailer park chic. He's got that maverick mystique and a face full of flyboy scars, but you can wrestle polar bars. You and him are just like a couple of tots.
So glad to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. I guess we've got a bit of a baseball theme going this hour on the program. The Cedar Rapids Colonels, the baseball team, has a new affiliation. For the past 20 years, they've been affiliated with the Los Angeles Angels. But starting this year, they're associated with the Minnesota Twins. So in this half hour, we want to talk about that affiliation change with a few Colonels fans, along with talking about a little bit about the business of baseball. Joining me this half hour, several Colonels fans. But wait, they are not just fans. They have taken on more of a role in the organization as volunteers. Lanny Peterson is with us in our Iowa City studio. He's a Cedar Rapids Colonels volunteer, also the host Family Coordinator. Lanny Peterson, welcome to you.
Thanks, Ben.
Also with us, Chuck and Cindy Young. They are have provided, been a host family for Colonels players for, what, over 10 years. Welcome to you, Chuck and Cindy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, are you a baseball fan? Are you a Colonels fan? Perhaps you have a question or a comment about the change in this affiliation or a question about the business of baseball. Are you a minor league baseball fan? We'd like to hear your comments, your questions this hour. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send us a message via Facebook, a post there on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. I'd like the three of you to enlighten me a little bit before we talk specifically about this affiliation change, because I have certainly been to Colonels games, enjoyed them very much. I enjoy playing and watching baseball, but I don't understand much about the minor leagues, how they work, especially in relation to the major leagues, the business of baseball. To tell me a little bit how about how the minor leagues are set up and their relation to the major leagues. Lanny, can you start off?
Yeah, I'm just going to start by one of the questions that I got asked after the change in affiliations was, are we still the Colonels? And that's because the people who were asking me were saying, well, didn't the Los Angeles Angels own the Colonels? You know, did that go elsewhere? That's not the case. Or somebody might ask me, well, why did the Angels get rid of you guys? And again, that's not the case. What you need to understand, I think, is players are drafted by major league teams. They're rookies. They're out of college, perhaps, maybe right out of high school. And they get into what's called a farm system, where they develop according to the coaches and of a particular organization. Cedar Rapids happens to be what we call a low A. There are different classes, okay, and you progress according to your abilities and according to your experience. There is one below us, which is rookie ball. It's normally maybe a 70-game schedule where we play 140 games. And if a player progresses, he can go to what's called high A, which is just the next step up. And then from the high A, they go to double A and then to triple A, and potentially or hopefully the majors. Everybody's dream is to make the big time, okay? Mm-hmm. But these players are property of the major league team.
Even at the lowest
tiers? At the lowest level, right.
Really? Okay.
Right. As a community, the Cedar Rapids Ball Club has signed an agreement. And for 20 years, they had that agreement with the Angels that the Angels would provide us players. We will provide a stadium or whatever for the players to participate in. The agreement, when we changed affiliations, we just merely changed the agreement. We didn't re-sign with the Angels, but was signed with the Twins is what it amounted to. Mm-hmm. And in terms of who's playing for us, that's up to the Twins right now. They make the decisions whether this guy is going to stay, this guy is going to go, or whatever.
So with this change of affiliation, because all those previous players belonged to the Los Angeles team, was everybody changed out?
Yes, we have no players left from last year, unless they were traded from the Angels to the Twins.
Mm-hmm. Do the players have any say in this?
Not at all.
Oh, wow.
They're a piece of meat. They understand that.
Okay. Okay, you've made some things very clear to me about the business of baseball so far. So this, the other most often asked question you got asked was, why did they get rid of you guys? What actually happened to make this change after 20 years of affiliation with the Los Angeles Angels?
I just need to say one thing, and that is they did not get rid of us.
Okay.
The local community has the opportunity to sign with whomever they wish, okay, as they best they see which affiliation or which team's going to best meet their needs, okay? And the decision was made by the board, the Cedar Rapids the board of directors, which I am not, okay, that this was the time to change affiliations to go with somebody like that. It's like you're saying, hey, we're available. Does anybody want to come and talk to us?
Mm-hmm.
And Major League Baseball governs when the Major League team can talk to a minor league team, and the Twins talked with us, and right now we're very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, also to understand here, this Class A Midwest League, you said low A, I think, includes not only the Cedar Rapids Colonels, but also Quad Cities River Bandits, Clinton Lumberjacks, Burlington Bees, and they are all affiliated with major league teams.
Correct.
Okay. The Iowa Cubs, that's a different thing.
That's AAA. That's one step below the major leagues.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I think I have a good picture now. So let's talk about what this affiliation change means. Let me ask it to you. What does it mean? Chuck.
Well, to me, not too much yet.
Okay, as a host family and a fan?
Yes,
no?
As a family. We follow the players that have lived with us, and right now they're still all in the Angels organization. So as we get players down the line from the Twins organization, we'll be following them closer. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm not too familiar with many of the Twins, players.
For those who are not familiar, minor league baseball teams, I guess, having this real need for host families, you have for 10 years done what? You host what, one player per season, more than one player in your house, actually?
Yeah, we're at our house, we're set up for two is the best number for us, and that's what it's been most of the time, unless one player gets moved out or gets to move up.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a choice? How do you find out, Cindy, who comes to live under your roof?
Well, that's left up to our coordinator. He does a wonderful job.
Okay.
So he sits down and interviews with the players, and then we fill out a questionnaire that gives them our housing situation, you know, whether we have cats, whether we have dogs, we have pets in the house, outside the house, you know, we have children in our home. All of those questions we answer for Lanny, and then he pairs us up with somebody that he feels would be suitable. A suitable match for us mm-hmm. and for the players.
Lanny, when you're coordinating as a host family coordinator for the Cedar Rapids Colonels, what are your biggest challenges in pairing?
Let me just I explain to ball players, and we all know this. Everybody's different. I make a point of going to spring training so that I can talk to the guys who are coming to Cedar Rapids. I make a point of talking with these guys once they're here in Cedar Rapids in the hotel. So that in a five-minute time, I get some kind of idea of who these people are. Everybody's habits, everybody's values, whatever, are different, and they range from one end to the end. So do my host families are that way. There are not all of them are alike either. So I try to get to know them if I can. You know, the biggest change for me from a coordinator's point of view was when I went to Fort Myers to look at the Twins, I didn't know anybody. And nobody down there knew me as far as the players go.
Right.
Whereas over a period of 20 years, you get this, some people would come and say, I had a buddy that lived with the Youngs last year. I live with them?
So you build up word of mouth.
Absolutely.
Word of mouth. But I guess these affiliations don't have much to do with the geography, because why would we in Iowa be affiliated with Los Angeles? It makes a lot more sense to be affiliated with a neighboring, one of our closest major league teams cities.
That argument can be made. Okay? I mean, there are other considerations, okay? And certainly it seems like it's going to be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. So this host family situation seems like it would be incredibly important to the players, because it's like you're going to be an exchange student going to another country instead of you going to another part of our country to live in someone's house. That has a lot to do with player satisfaction. They're very interested in finding out where they live, I bet.
Without getting into too many specifics, players at this level – do not earn a lot of money. Now, you've heard about, we have a big bonus guy on our team, and you hear about the salaries that major league ball players make. Players at this level are chasing a dream, and they are getting very, very little money. So if they had to spend $300 or $400 a month for a place to live, that would be very, very, very much of a hardship. Consequently, our group, we're somewhat altruistic because we're giving back to what we've been given. Nobody charges any rent. I mean, the kid knows that you're going to live here. We're adults. There may be some situations, but we're adults, but we're not going to charge you any rent. And we hope that you treat us, you know, as an honored guest.
Mm-hmm. Room is provided. Any board? Family meals, Lonnie or Cindy?
There are family meals. We try to treat our players as part of our family. You know, we have a little conversation with them at the beginning when they first arrive. Give them an option. I think if, like on a Sunday afternoon, if there's a 2 o'clock game, so they're done earlier, I always ask ahead of time, you know, if you guys don't have plans, we're going to grill out or we're going to do this or do that, you're more than welcome to join us. And probably, I would say 95, 98% of the time they will, because, you know, they don't get home cooked meals that often. You know, they're at the field an awfully lot, you know, during the day. They have to be there early. They're playing late at night. They're eating fast food. I know that the organization does provide them with food from different local restaurants after the game. But some of them, you know, like to have a sit-down home dinner. And so we try to provide that if whenever we can.
Cindy Young, along with my other guests, Chuck Young and Lanny Peterson, they are volunteers for the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Lanny, the host family coordinator, and Chuck and Cindy Young have been hosting ball players from the Colonels for over 10 years. So we're talking about this in light of the new affiliation between the Colonels and the Minnesota Twins. Previously, the last 20 years, they've been affiliated with the Los Angeles Angels. Has this new affiliation affected attendance? What's been the feedback? Lanny?
I'm smiling because that hopefully it will. I think the weather has affected the attendance more than whom we're affiliated
yeah,
with.
Yeah, what happened to spring?
At this
yeah,
point.
Okay.
I don't know. However, if we have a hot stove banquet in January, coldest day, you know, we talk about baseball with hopes that the good weather's about to come. This is the first year we sold out. Because of the Minnesota Twins. I think that's a very real possibility. Obviously, we hope to see lots of people come down from southern Minnesota and northern Iowa. And there's been a great deal of interest. I know the sales for memorabilia, T-shirts, and so on, those sales are way up. So I think there's excitement. I didn't realize there were that many Twins fans in Cedar Rapids until the hot stove banquet came around.
So that has simply to do with the overlap here in Iowa, because we have no major league team, that you do have a lot of Twins fans. So it stands to reason you have more than you do the Angels fans, right?
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Definitely. I can't stay up late enough to even listen to their games or watch their games in the West Coast.
Tell me a little bit about now, I understand baseball is, of course, not normally seen as a physically dangerous sport compared to some other sports, but there are injuries. A couple of days ago, for instance, a Toronto Blue Jays pitcher took a line drive off his head that looked really horrible on screen, and he suffered, in fact, a skull fracture. Chuck and Cindy, one of the players that stayed with you, I understand, a catcher suffered an injury mid-season. What happened? Was this last season?
No, it's been 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got the worst part to us, I think, was he just got the opportunity to start. The previous catcher got moved up, and it was about the third inning, and a player came sliding in from third base, and they collided, and he ended up with a broken ankle. Didn't get to play the rest of the year, and was around our house often in crutches or a cast. And so we did develop a closer relationship with him, I think,
mm-hmm.
Because of that injury. But it was, as it turned out, career-ending for him.
Yeah. Cindy?
Well, at that game, his parents were there as well. So that was just really, really scary for us as the host family parent. But then his actual parents were there, and they saw that. And it happened, like, in the third inning. So, you know, he was unconscious. I think both players were. So, and I think it hit like the ESPN collision. You know, they have those shows that show nasty collisions. I think it was on the air then.
Mm-hmm.
So
when we talked about Jackie Robinson in the first half hour being, you know, these are not intentionally things, spiking or beaning people, but Jackie Robinson out there being intentionally targeted by the ball, by spikes coming up to first base, that's quite something, especially when you're this close to injuries as host families.
Yes, you're right. You hope those things don't happen, but I don't think they do. But there's opportunities for injuries.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, as fans for many years, I don't know if we put the group of three of you together collectively, how many years of fan experience you have here. I want to hear why you're a fan. What do you get out of being in the stadium that makes it such a treat for you? Who wants to go first? Perhaps you, Chuck.
Well, I've been playing ball since I was 5 years old, and it's something that you can seem to be able to throw a ball or And I went up from Little League to Babe Ruth to high school to town teams and then to softball. So it's just, and I graduated from a small school and we only had baseball and basketball. That's part of it too. But I just love throwing a ball, I guess.
And so as a fan now, less active as a player, though I don't know, you probably play till today. Is it that experience that lets you get into the skin of the player on the field and makes you really feel the play as if you're there?
Yeah. Playing the game, I remember those things. You know, you see a play happen and maybe you've brought something back that happened to you. And I think the participation for me that I was able to play.
Cindy Young, what's a highlight moment for you or a big appeal for you about being a fan of the Colonels?
Well, I'm kind of the newbie because between Chuck and Lanny, they've had a lot more baseball experience than I have. You know, I would go to a Fairfax ball game, but, you know, I just was not an avid baseball fan, where I'm more attuned, I think, now, especially because being a host family parent. I like being able to relate to the boys that are out there on the field, you know, when one of our players gets a hit and gets to first base or gets a home run. You know, I'm very, very excited. I'm the one standing up screaming and hollering their names, not Chuck. He's more calm about it. I'm not. So just the opportunity to get to know the players has been the highlight, I think, of mine, and also to meet their families.
Mm-hmm. Really, and I imagine as those years, as you didn't have the experience that your husband did, it's that as you learn about the game, and baseball, if anything, is a game of nuance, the more you understand the nuances, the more you can appreciate it and become a fan. Lanny Peterson, let's go back to a favorite moment of yours.
I just want to make a comment about our group. We are good at what we do because we have good people like Chuck and Cindy, people who are willing to give up their homes. They like baseball, but they also like being around young people, and they are, you know, this altruism is a good idea. I mentioned that I do go to spring training, and two issues. We talk about transportation and girlfriends. Girlfriends, I make the comment about there's a difference between a girlfriend and a groupie. And it's up to a host family what their situation is. But I do mention that. And once I had a player say afterwards, he called me up and he says, "Lanny, I'm married. Does that make a difference?" And so I said, "Yeah, it does. I have a family who would take a married couple." Okay, fine. He called me the next morning and he says, "Lanny, I forgot to tell you something.
They're children."
I said, "What is it?" He says, "We have a dog."
Oh, okay.
I said, "I'll get back to you." Yeah. All right. So I called this family and the family says, "Well, we have two dogs. If the dogs get along, it's okay." And so I called him back and he came in there and it worked extremely well for 3 weeks. Until the player was moved up to high A. But the point is that it's the support from the families, the support from management, from the Colonels organization. This is tremendous. This allows us to do what we do.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, has anyone who in the Colonels organization recently gone on to greater success, gone all the way up to the majors?
Of course.
Of course.
Well, tell me a few stories here. We got a couple minutes.
Okay,
left.
My favorite player is Peter Borges. Mm-hmm. Of course, we can talk about Mike Trout if you want to, but he could only live at one house. Okay, but you know, we all know that, you know, in terms of success. But in some ways, every player that's here is a major leaguer. Mm-hmm. You know, we all go to perhaps college graduations. We go to weddings. We get pictures of babies. The guys have been with us.
Do you get to go to the major league games when you have these people ascend and get some tickets?
I always say the only cost that they have living with me is if you make it to the biggies, it's not Lanny who.
it's Lanny Peterson.
Or Chuck who.
It's, "Hi, my best friend Lanny Peterson.
Yeah,
welcome to the game.
Remember me."
I was just going to say, if you go through the Angels roster, except for those big names that they just spent all kinds of money on, many of them have come through Cedar Rapids. In fact, a vast majority. In fact, the Hispanics that are on the team probably came through one of our families.
Mm-hmm. As a coordinator for the host families, Lanny, it must be kind of difficult to, well, you size up a player and you say, this one has major league potential here. So I'm going to keep him in my family.
I don't cherry pick.
Okay.
Okay.
Who have you had in your house that has gone a long ways there, Chuck and Cindy?
Well, the highest one is Ephraim Navarro. He's had two September call-ups, which means he got to go play for the Angels in the months of September. They're allowed to expand their rosters, and he got to go twice. So he's the highest one we've had.
All right. Chuck and Cindy Young, host a family for the Colonels players. Lanny Peterson, not only a volunteer, but also the host family coordinator. Thank you for an entertaining half hour and enlightening. I didn't know that much about the business of baseball. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Our theme music, written and performed by the River Monks. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program, or perhaps you have an idea for a future program. What would you like us to talk about on River to River? Contact us anytime, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.